I laugh every time he says I'm cuckoo about my mission. I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means, but it's true. It is absolutely true. I am cuckoo about my mission. You know, my friends got different topics in this I Love Cincinnati, We Love Cincinnati series. I absolutely do love my city. But Allie got I Love My Friends, which I do. Brad got I Love My Neighbors, which I also do. Last week, Fred had I Love My City, which I very much do. I get I Love My Mission. I mean, that's kind of an odd thing. I mean, when I think about people and how they toss out the word love, my son can't get him to switch over completely to the Reds. I was raised in Chicago. He loves the Chicago Cubs. The word love is actually true. He's diehard. He studies stats, everything like that. My wife loves McAllister's iced tea after walking with her buddies around big long walks and things like that. There's different ways of using the word love, but for me, when I think about this love word, I wonder, you know, what do I really mean? Do I really love my mission? And in the context of what God's taken me through over my lifetime, I know a lot of you aren't in the same place that I am, but I absolutely love what I'm here for. And today I get a chance to share that. And my mission, simply stated, is to help the chronically unemployed to get a job and fight their way out of poverty. Yeah, absolutely. My mission is to invest in reading and math offerings to second, third, and fourth-year-olds to change the direction of their life and fight against the projection of prison capacity that comes off of their reading scores in second and third grade. That's my mission. My mission is to help first-generation minority students who would never have a chance to go to school get accepted, stay in school, and graduate from college because it's going to change the trajectory of their life. That's my mission. It's very nice of you all to applaud after each one of these, but we're about fixing cars so that people that are the poor and the working poor can actually have jobs and stay in jobs and not worry about transportation. We're about working on the divorce rate. Any kind of a big issue that we are aiming to fight, that is my mission. And it sounds kind of grandiose, and it sounds as though I'm, you know, uniquely fighting the world, but I am. And I believe you can too. So I invite you to love my mission also. That's what this city is about. That is what this church is about. We are an activistic bunch. I don't know if the word activistic is a word, but join with me in that one. Brian always makes up stuff. We do. We are an activistic bunch. We want to make things better. And so about 5.5 years ago, I launched this thing called One City. And One City, simply said, does two things. It builds or expands citywide initiatives. It builds or expands them. So that means they're either here, and we take them and make them bigger, or we bring something in a common area and we invite other partners to join it and make it big. And our goal is to attack it as a city. And the second thing we do, in addition to building these initiatives, is to mobilize people, get people out of the seats and into life-on-life experiences. Because we find that not only do we help people, but we change dramatically. Two lives at a time. And our whole city changes because of what we can do. And you're sitting there going, yeah, what is this weird middle-aged man sitting up on top of stage talking about changing the city, and how on earth did he come along to this mission? And I'll tell you, it was a kind of a weird process. There were three things that happened. The first was this uncovering of what my background was. And my dad has just died in the last 3 weeks. And as I went through that, a lot of things kind of came together and they become more crystal in my mind and in my heart and how they've shaped me. And one of the things that was very clear is that my mom and dad, who were two immigrants from Europe, left under basically the bad stuff going on at the end of World War II. My mom was placed in a concentration camp and escaped and came over with an aunt. And then my dad, who was a farmer, they made wine, they owned a vineyard. They lost all their property and all the other kind of stuff, and he was going to get sucked into the war. He was going to be a 15-year-old or something like that, and he said, I'm not going to go in this war. I don't even believe in this war. I'm not. So he took off, came in, swore in on Ellis Island after working and trying to get enough money, worked his way over on a boat, and swore in, got $5, bought a ticket to Chicago. The crazy thing about this is he ends up arriving in Chicago with literally no clothes except the ones on his back, no language. He can only talk German. Didn't know a word of English. No money, literally not a penny, because he spent all of his money on the train ticket. No friends, none, and no occupation. And there's something incredibly motivating when I think of my dad. He's a hero of mine. He's an incredible story. Because of him, I am here. Because of his work, because of his commitment to trying to fight his way out, he's got a whole generation of kids that are following. And it's an inspiring story for me. And I said, somehow, I need to understand it and I need to help do the same thing for other people. And there was this personal commitment. And I was never really into poverty and I was never really into the issues that are facing our city more than anyone else. But somehow, this thing came to life for me. In addition to the personal discovery that I had, I also kind of went through this spiritual thing where I'd been a Christ follower for a long time. I had, you know, gotten serious about my faith, asked the questions, you know, what are we here for? For goodness sake, we're here, we live some years, and then we're gone. It's got to be more than that. I went along my journey. I got serious about God, but I still didn't really figure out that it's more than just what I did to love God there and back. He has some tough things. You know, he pushed in a little bit more. He said, you know, when he was connecting with Peter before leaving, Jesus said, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know I do. And then he asks him a second time. He says, Peter, do you really love me? Do you love me more than all these other people that I'm hanging out with? For 3 years you've been with me. Do you really love me? He said, yes, Lord, you know I do. And he asks him a third time. For goodness sake, Jesus, yes, I love you. He says, and take care of my sheep. And I know that there's a clear message from God that it's not what you do that earns the favor of God in your life. But yet there's these commands to go take care of people who are different than you, people that God puts in your way. How do you get to that point? And there wasn't really, there were opportunities in church and there were opportunities in ministries and so on and so forth. But the third thing that kind of happened to get me into this mission process was this kind of professional / observational thing that happened. And I sat there and kind of looked at the city the same way that I was looking at my company. I worked with P&G, and my last assignment there was doing some organizational work that had to do with, you know, reducing some of the overlap and some of the inefficiencies that we did as we were trying to go to customers and we were trying to market and do some other things like that. And I went through this process to say, man, you know, it's the same way in our church. What is going on here? If you look at Cincinnati, you might think the largest company in town is Kroger or P&G or GE or Federated or put in the blanks. That's a pretty, you know, easy way to measure that. How many employees do they have? What kind of size business? Well, whatever. But if you step back, you say, wait a minute, let's look at the largest organization in Cincinnati. It's the Christ followers in any city that is the largest organization. There are more people. There are more properties. There are more dollars. There are more hours. There are more hearts. There are more prayers. In any given city, the body of Christ, the people who call themselves Christ followers, who've said, yeah, I want to be part of this movement, those people are the single largest organization in any city. And I said, somehow there has to be a way for us to figure out and get these people to work together, because we keep on inventing our own thing. There's 900 churches and there's 9,000 501c3s, nonprofits. How can that be? 9,000? People want to do good, and people want to see change. But when we have 9,000, when we have 900, when we have so much, we're not necessarily tapping it in. And I'm not suggesting that anywhere close to the majority or half or even a third of those nonprofits are Christian or trying to do that. But think of the power that could be harnessed if we worked together. So I felt like something had to be done. And, you know, as naive and ignorant as I might be, I said, I somebody's got to do that. So I tried getting something started, but I in no way, shape wanted to be me that was going to start this and lead this thing. So somehow I pulled some leaders together in the city. Brian was there, some other senior pastors, spoke with some business leaders. I remember having a meeting actually out probably somewhere in the atrium because it was before this part of the building was built. And in typical Brian Tome fashion, he wanted to have a knife and cut and say, this is a covenant. We're going to build something bigger than any one of us. And have all of us slit our hands and share the blood brother thing. And nobody else really wanted to do that. So we passed. And but we did agree to start something that was going to be an organization that helped us work together. And that's what ended up being One City. And as I started working, I came up with basically two strategies. And I said, we've got to get some early wins, and we got to deal with real issues. And early wins, to me, looked like kids. When you think about a trial strategy, if you're going to start something that's aiming at changing the city, you go to where people's hearts are. And everybody has a place in their heart for young people. When you think about the hope of the future, you think about kids. When you think about wrongs being done to someone that you just can't stand by and watch, you think about kids. When you think about tugging at heartstrings of people, you think about kids. So I thought our trial strategy should be working with tutoring. And so I looked around the country, and we came up with a model called WizKids in Denver. And I invited some other partners to come, because One City doesn't want to invent everything. We don't know what we're doing. We want to take best practice information and bring it here and say, can we apply these principles with these other partners and then bring more and more resources in together? And so we did that. We asked for Brian to come and Tim Seneff to represent Kaleidoscope, which was the tutoring program here before WizKids was here. And we invited CityCure, who has a really large children's ministry, to come in. And we said, let's build something bigger than any of us. And in a true act of unselfishness, and because Brian not only gets this, but our church believes and acts this out, I asked, would you consider changing Kaleidoscope? Not calling it Kaleidoscope, which was already recognized by the Cincinnati public school system in Cincinnati as the finest tutoring program in the city anywhere. Would you consider giving that which was already recognized as the best away and participate in this larger movement so that other churches and other people might want to join? We'll have the credibility of what was already done. We'll have this model of something that the president's office and the National Educators Association, NEA or NAE, whatever the right union is, have both recognized as a fine model and one of the best models to do tutoring. Can we do this and build it together? Will you give this name and this credibility and this heritage and this ability to tell your people, we're doing something that works. We're being recognized. Will you give that away to be part of something bigger than yourself? And Brian instantly said, if it's going to bring more people into the game, absolutely. That's the kind of thing that makes me, you know, thrilled. That's the kind of thing that has now led to 53 other churches participating in a citywide tutoring initiative. And the second thing I wanted to do was to attack in some general umbrella the issue of poverty. You see, our city, regardless of which study you look at, really stinks at helping people get out of poverty. We have an enormously high percentage of our population that's living at the poverty level. Whether we're third, whether we're tenth, whether it's some other, the bottom line is it's an unacceptable figure. And so we said, we've got to do something about this. So we did some interviews, and we tried to see what kinds of things were needed, what kind of things were already in place. We went and we visited some of the more successful ones, and we said, how can we bring them in? How can we include them? Are there other principles we can apply, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in one focus group, things became very clear. In one focus group, I had 25 to 34-year-old males, and I asked them what they did for fun. It wasn't part of our script. It just kind of came in to my heart. Now, if you believe that God can give us a field book with the Bible, if you believe he can talk from the counsel of other friends, I believe that in your quietness, God can prompt and give you an idea. This idea had nothing to do with Mark. This idea, I really believe, came from God. So I asked these guys, what does it look like to have fun for you guys? And these were poor, working poor guys. And they said, well, we like watching movies and we like working out. I said, okay, working out, got that. And there's a ministry called Lord's Gym that we wanted to, you know, steer them if they weren't already in there. We're going to steer them over to that. And we said, what else? What does it look like? Do you do anything for, you know, relationship? What do you do when you're hanging with your buds, you know? And they came up with the idea of cards. So we started talking more about, okay, if it's cards, what about, you know, pool, ping pong, games, other kind of things? They said, absolutely. Would you go to that if we just had a place that was kind of like a fun center? And you just came. And they said, absolutely. So we started small, but we invented this thing called the outlet. And the outlet is a really, really simple idea. It's where you don't know the difference between volunteers and poor people in the neighborhood. And they come together and they play euchre, they play spades, they play hearts. They play Monopoly, they play ping pong, pool. We have one volunteer, Megan, who is an artist, who said, if you give me some canvases and some paints, I can help people learn how to express themselves through art. And we started doing those kinds of things. We actually have an art show at the end of the year. It's a spectacular thing. And over art, over games, over whatever it is, you have the chance to connect with people who are very, very different than you. And so we're sitting here having this discussion, and these guys go, yeah, I'll definitely do that. And when this focus group was over, one of the guys came up to me and said, but I got to tell you something. I go, please. He said, you guys and your programs need to really understand what works. I said, what do you mean? And he said, it's not about programs. It's not about anything like that. Because this program, though it's good, I've been in it twice. And I'm glad I got that information. I'm glad I got that training. I'm glad I have this new direction. But let me tell you something. What's going to happen to me on Monday? And I said, what do you mean? He said, on Monday, who is going to help me find a different place to live? On Monday, who is going to be with me and try to get a job that you say is okay because you don't want me working something that's temporary because you can't, you know, keep making stuff off of it and you don't want me to do something illegal. So who's going to help me with that? And then who's going to be my friend so that I don't, you know, because I'm lonely, go back to the same friends that got me in all this? Do you understand it has a little bit to do with programs, but it has everything to do with people becoming my friend? If you can't get people to come into my life, then don't bother doing this. Startling. What a plea for help. What a plea for a different model. What a plea to focus not on how many dollars you can raise and how many programs you can put and but how many people you can get that care. How many people that want to take care of my sheep? It's an amazing thing to stand back and say, this is my life, this is what I do, I'm trying to focus on giving life-changing opportunities to people who need help and to people who don't need help. Because when they build this relationship, they both change. Our city changes. And yet we can miss it. We can miss it quickly. I had a chance to meet a person in one of these focus groups, and they said, you know, the things that make you a different person are not that distinctive. And they didn't use the word distinctive, but it wasn't that distinctive. It's that you're asking the question. And I thought, oh my goodness gracious sakes. What does God put in front of us that we miss all the time just because we're not looking or listening? And a verse came to mind. It was Ephesians 2, verse 10. Brad Johansson spoke out of Ephesians a couple weeks ago, and this book has so much inside it. This verse jumped off the page. And right before it, there's a little section that talks about, it's through grace that you're saved, that you have relationship with me, that I find favor with you. It's nothing you did. You can't perform to earn my favor yet. We are his workmanship. We're created in Christ to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to walk in. He's already laid out opportunities for us to jump in. It's an incredible thought. This afternoon, you have the chance to walk through one of those or not. The question is where you're going to put yourself. Are you going to have the right eyes? Are you going to be listening? And just because I do this for my job, in addition to for my relationship with God, I'm no better at it than you are. But I want to tell you how the mission revealed itself to me. And the mission revealed itself to me in my daughter's birthday, just 4 months ago or whatever it is. In April, she turned 12. I have three kids, two boys and a younger daughter. So she's the youngest of the family and has a very special place in my heart. We make a king or queen for the day on the birthdays in our family, right? The king or queen of the day picks everything from what you're going to eat, when you're going to eat, where you're going to go, what kind of activities you want, if you're going to get gifts, what kind of gifts you would prefer if you get them, and all that kind of stuff, okay? And you basically lay out the perfect day. So every birthday, I present a little checklist. You can talk to my family, it's true. I try to make this special, it's a little tradition. A checklist to say, yes, I'd like to wake up this time. I'd like to eat the big fat cinnamon rolls in the morning. I'd like to, you know, whatever it is. So I lay this out for my daughter and prepare for our birthday celebration for her. And she has a write-in item. There wasn't an empty space, so I don't know how she came up with this. But she said, I want to go shopping. I said, shopping? On your birthday? That's kind of a, with the whole family? She goes, no, I just want to go with you. I go, really? I go, well, you have to know a little bit about our family because my wife despises shopping, okay? And I do the shopping for clothes and stuff like that. But so I said, really, what do you want to shop for? She said, well, now understand, it was just after spring break. So she had 4 pet sitting jobs for a week to 10 days. So she actually worked a ton of hours and got a lot of money. She had like $150 or plus or minus, I don't know what it was. But it was a lot of money. And she said, I want to go shopping with you and I want to take my time. And I, okay, yeah. And so we went, I said, where do you want to go? She said, Kenwood Mall. I was like, okay, Kenwood Mall, and what do you want, she goes, but not in the stores that you want to go in. I go, okay, where do you want to go? She goes, where you might imagine. And I said, do you mean like American Eagle and those kind of, yes. So we spent 4.5 hours in 4 stores. Do the math. These stores are not large. They're as big as the stage, maybe. You spend an hour plus in every one of those stores. We had a chance to go to Auntie Anne's, which I always blow by. You know, it's a fabulous thing in case you haven't done the Auntie Anne's. These soft pretzels, and you get them whatever flavor you want and all that. We got drinks. We went to the food court. We did everything. 4.5 hours, 4 stores, and we went kind of through a process. I said, what do you want? What do you want? To look for in this store? And she said, I want some tops. And I said, okay, well, let's look at the tops. Why don't you give me the style you like, and then we'll pick the colors you like, and then we'll pick the sizes and see how they fit, and if that doesn't work, I'll go run back so you don't have to give up your place in the little fitting booth. And so, if you have any idea how many times I ran from the fitting booth back to pick a different shade of purple. I know purple's hot, but come on. You know, this was, so anyway, we go and we have this fabulous time. And honestly, I almost missed it because if I would have thought of 4.5 hours in my regular vision, and I would have thought of 4.5 hours in 4 stores, I would have probably missed the whole point. I would have been impatient, tapping my foot, doing whatever. Yet all of a sudden, I felt like God was whispering to me, I have created this opportunity for you to have intimacy with this girl. She's not going to want to hang out with you in 4 years. Enjoy it. Take every ounce you can to bless her. Don't go buy the Auntie Anne's. Go buy that stupid pretzel. Every one of those things. And honestly, it was a 10.0. I was blown away. My heart was busting with love and fulfillment. I was jazzed. On the way home, she said, "Dad, when we get home, I want to play you a song." I said, "Okay." So we get home, I'm in my den, and she says, "I want to play you this song by Taylor Swift." And she brings in this song. Give a listen. I'm talking, come on. It ripped my heart out. I don't even know who Taylor Swift is. But she's one of my favorite artists now. You gotta be kidding me. She had the best day with me today. I almost missed it. Because we're running too hard. Because we're not thinking about the opportunities that He has laid before us to demonstrate His workmanship. We demonstrate His workmanship by living out the master brushstrokes or the carving and chipping of an image that He's given for us to become. The question is, how are we spending our time? Are we living it out of complete boredom? Are we just trying to find comfort, trying to figure out how many dollars we can make, how many houses we can buy, how many whatever it is? That's a boring story. I got to tell you, I don't want to read that. If that's a story that you're writing, I'm really not that interested. But if you're trying to figure out what kind of opportunities God has in front of you, I guarantee you they're with people. Because He said the sum of the law of the prophets can be summarized in this one: love God and love others. That's it. And the more we do, and the more we respond to this spiritual challenge I felt like God was calling me to, take care of my sheep, the more my life becomes more interesting. The more I get the best day with you today in my life. The second thing that I kind of learned and discovered in trying to find out my mission and how God reveals His mission to us was to figure out who He wants us to spend time with. I was doing pretty well at home, and I understood the thing with Bethany, and I understand that deal. I try to really focus when I'm at home. But I felt like God was also saying, you know, you need to spend time with people who are very different from you. Because I am bringing the world to your backyard. And you need to be investing in those people every bit as much. And so I try to figure out, well, what does that really mean? And how is He bringing the rest of the world to my backyard? What does it look like? And two stories came up. One was the Good Samaritan. I thought of the Good Samaritan so many times in the past. And for those of you who are familiar with the story, I'm just going to go through it real quickly for those of us who don't. Good Samaritan is an explanation by Jesus to an expert in the law about how you love other people. Because He just got done explaining, you love God, you love other people. And He says, yeah, but teacher, how do I do that? And He says, let me give you a story to explain. The story is, a guy's going down a path, he gets taken over by robbers, beaten, left bloody on the side of the road, he's going to die, they take all of his money, he left there, he has nothing to do. He's going to go. Three people walk by him, the first one's a priest, someone you'd think would be motivated, would be called by his life to stop and care for this man. He walks by him. The second is a Levite, and that's a person who takes care of the temple and a person who's taken care of by the church. You'd imagine him as well to be very motivated to take this person and take care of them. He walks by. And a third person comes by, a person that you wouldn't assume at all would stop. That person's a Samaritan. He wasn't in the cool club, had some bad theology, but it's him who stops, takes pity on the man, has compassion, puts him on his mule, walks him into town, gets him fixed up, puts him in a hotel, gives a half a year wages and says, take care of him. I'm going to be back. I'm going to check in on him. This is my friend. And so Jesus, in responding back and forth to this expert in the law, says this. Which of these three do you think was neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one that had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Now, this guy's not happy with this response. Clearly, he's a guy who's schooled in the church. He's a guy who knows the law. He's a priest or a Levite, most likely. So Jesus goes right at him and says, it has nothing to do with all of your performance. It has to do with whether you take care of my sheep. That's what we're called to do. Jesus is bringing those people into our lives. We might walk by them. And they look very different from us. Cities are changing rapidly. That's why I love this series. We love Cincinnati. I love this series. This is what I'm giving my life to. God is moving people all over the globe into cities because of economic importance, because of being taken care of, because of relationship, because of a variety of reasons. Over half the world's population live in the top 400 cities. That's amazing. God is bringing them into the cities. He's moving them all around the globe. 80% of the world's Christ followers were in North America or Western Europe in the year 1900. By the year 1980, it was half in Western Europe and North America. By the year 2000, it was only 20% of the Christ followers that lived in Western Europe and North America. North America is now the third largest mission field. Think of it. Amazing opportunities. And he's bringing people of all different shapes, sizes, colors, backgrounds, ethnicities, etc. 2/3 of the world's nations are represented in one zip code in New York. Think of the complexities, the different backgrounds, the orientations, the values, the thinking that is represented by people who were raised in another country. It's spectacular. It's very, very different from us. We have this amazing chance to look at our city and say, what are you doing uniquely in Cincinnati? For example, the largest concentration of Middle Easterners outside of the Middle East, Detroit, Michigan. The largest concentration of Somalians. Now, this is kind of a funny story of God, maybe with a sense of humor here. The largest concentration of Somalians, take a stab. You're thinking Africa, hot climate, they may, you know, who knows. Minneapolis, Minnesota. What's up with that? These poor people have to get coats fast. You know, it's amazing. He's bringing people and different representations all around us. And what does Cincinnati offer us? And do we care? And are we responding? And are we taking care of his sheep? So the question I ask you is, are you walking in those opportunities that he set before you? Are you intentionally spending time with people who are different than you? A friend of mine was involved in one of our programs. It's Teamworks. Teamworks is a program that is very cool, actually. It's people who are chronically unemployed. They get connected with a mentor. They get a job through Cincinnati Works, a fabulous organization that places about 600 to 700 people a year who've been chronically unemployed into a new role. And my friend was helping do interview skills. Now, interestingly, his wife, who is a one-city non-paid employee, it's another discussion we have occasionally, but she's this unbelievable woman who has a gift in trying to help people figure out where they belong. And she's looking at her husband saying, you know, you need to shift from that into this mentor relationship because you are going to change dramatically when you start connecting with somebody who's different than you. And he wasn't reluctant, he was just slow. It took him a little while. Well, my friend got paired up with a fantastic young man. This guy had had a rugged life. He had 6 foster parents, had been passed around, and now he was a young adult, and he wanted employment. In fact, the relationship that he had with his last foster dad was so good that he wanted to honor him, and they actually became father-son. I'm not sure if they've done something legally or not, but he considers him his dad, and he wanted to stay in Cincinnati and generate income so that he and his father could have a better way of life. And my friend got invited into this dynamic because he raised his hand. And as a result, he gets a job, talks to my friend. He says, you know, I really want to get my forklift license, because if I get my forklift license, I can make 50, 60, 70% more than I'm making per hour now. And my friend, who's vice president of business development for a large company, says, you know, we've got a warehouse and we got people doing the forklift. Do you need anything special, or can we just get you the training? So sure enough, they get the training that's appropriate. The guy gets his forklift license and he gets a better job. Well, in the meantime, one of the other programs that One City's been working on for 4 years, so some of this doesn't happen overnight, is being able to provide these scholarships for students who are never going to get a chance to go to school. All right, half of the minority students in this country don't even apply to college. Of those, half of them don't make it through. And the reasons are things like study habits, issues at home, money, support, friendships on campus, being a minority in a mostly white context. And so we've been working with two universities, Cincinnati Christian University and Cedarville, to get these little groups of four placed on their campuses so they can support each other and be on campus together, and they get leadership roles and a mentor in their lives to help them succeed and stay in school and graduate, because we know that their life is going to be different. Well, I mentioned this to my friend. He said, hey, can my guy apply for the scholarship? Even though, yeah, absolutely. So the great thing is, not only does this guy get the job that's paying him more, but now he qualified and he's going to be getting free full ride for 4 years. Yeah. This is spectacular stuff. And not to minimize the role that my friend has played, but he's an ordinary guy who just raised his hand, who said, I want to give part of who I am and the network of resources and things that I have available to me to somebody who doesn't. And as a result, this young man and his father are in a completely different trajectory than they were prior to them meeting. His life is forever changed because, frankly, because my other friend, the wife, nagged him to get a little bit more involved. It's an amazing, amazing story, and they happen all the time. We have them across all 9 different programs. So I won't bore you with more stories, and I won't bore you with all the programs we have, but we have a place for everyone in this room. If you are not involved in one of the things that's already going, or if you want to take the next step, it's not necessarily better, it's deeper. You know, we have trial strategies here, things like Thanksgiving turkey giveaway. And I love seeing boxes piled high. I'm a Crossroad Mason guy, so our participation at Crossroads Mason is something I get to brag about. We have 99% or something, 98-99% participation. Spectacular news. We were all involved. But that's a one-time thing. Angel Tree, same kind of deal. And then there's the next thing, where you go from getting your feet wet to wading in a little bit more, maybe up to your knees. And those are things like getting involved in a trip, going to Mumbai, working with the slave industry, the sex slave industry, going to Mama Lodi, working with the AIDS hospice, with the medical missions team, blessing that community, or going to New Orleans. We had 600 people, I think, going to the New Orleans trips. Spectacular. And for a couple of weeks, their life is changed. We also have a Katrina in Cincinnati. We have 25% of our population in this city that's living at or below the poverty line. Poverty is complex. Just because you get a job doesn't mean you got it fixed. When you get a job, your housing subsidy goes down. When you get a job, your child care issues go through the roof. When you get a job, your transportation needs increase dramatically. It's not simple. That's why it's still here. But I know we can do something about it. And that's why I love my mission. Because I get a chance to invite you guys to become part of his workmanship in a different way. You're already a masterpiece. Don't hear any challenge that says you're not a beautiful creation in God. But hear that the more you walk into these opportunities, the more you radiate the things that he's about. And we have a sweet spot, a place where your passion can be realized, whether it's working with kids, working with people getting out of incarceration, whether it's working with people that are getting their first job, students, whatever it is, we've got a place, I promise, that has your passion. Whether it's your experience and skill level and whatever, we match that with your passion. And then we match your time available so that you can make it work. We're not talking about big things. These are not big commitments. It's maybe an hour a week or hour every other week for you to get involved in somebody who's very different than you and to walk through the opportunities that he's put before you. I'll close with a story about my dad who just passed away about 3 weeks ago. And I had a nice chance to go up on a trip in Montana with another dad, his son, and some other dads and their sons. So I got a chance to bring my two boys, and everybody had gone away for a little hike. And I had a chance to sit there and kind of go through the loss of my dad. And at first I thought, yeah, I'm going to miss him terribly. And then I thought, oh my gosh, he was a great man. He was uneducated but wise. He was poor but generous. And so on and so forth. I appreciated what a man he was. And then the third part that I was thinking about was, look at this fantastic, majestic setting that I'm in. These beautiful mountains. This eagle came and descended right in front of me. Raging river behind me, filling the sounds that you can only imagine. I said, this is majesty. And I felt like God was saying to me, but wait a minute. What I do here, I do all over the world. I make beautiful landscapes. But what I did with your dad, now that was special. I was showing off with your dad. And my dad was an ordinary man. But what my dad did was he walked through the opportunities that God had in front of him. So I invite you, if you're interested, come talk to us out at the info booth. We have people there. We'd just love to get your name, set you up for an orientation. There's no commitment today. Don't worry about that. You know, some of you might be involved in Habitat. Some of you might be involved in something else. Whatever God is putting in front of you, that's what I encourage you. But if you don't have a place yet, and if you're not connected to people who are different than you, I encourage you to consider getting involved in something that One City's working on. It will change your life, I guarantee. Let's pray. Lord, we're just grateful that you care about us, that you offer us hope, and that you call us to be beyond ourselves, not just focus on our own story. Lord, I ask that you would help us write terrific scripts for our lives, that you would help us paint pictures with the relationships that we have, that you would inspire us to be about the things that you're about. So I lift up everybody here, and I ask that in this moment of reflection, that you'd speak to our hearts and ask us how we can walk through the next opportunity you've set before us. Pray all these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you.